Hello, this is Dean Gocher. I'm founder and director of the Institution for Authority Research. I encourage you to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways to acknowledge Him. Then He's the one who directs your path. That's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And this program's about the enemy, the anathema to those scriptures, the dialectical process. I call it diaprax. It's two words, dialectic, which is a process, as I shared in the last program, and praxis. The Greek word praxis is simply the English word practice. Today they call it theory and practice. They praxis, the name from the National Test for Teachers is praxis 1, praxis 2, praxis 3. It's a non-biblical praxis. In other words, it's to find what we have in common and all that's of the world. See, that's what we can find in common. The lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. That's common to every man. That's called sin. That's what we all have in common. That's lie not one to another. See, if you've put off your old man with his praxis, his deeds. And what do we all have? Lie. We lie. The moment we say we can do it without God's direction in our life, we're a liar. You cannot. It is not in you to direct your steps. See, the only laws you have that you can use to direct your steps are the laws of the flesh. As I shared in the last program in regards to Carl Rogers and Rogerian psychology, that law of the flesh is the environment through our senses that gets to our mind. See, the touch, taste, sight, smell, sound, you become aware of something in the environment, and then there are nerves that are affected, and you look into the environment. If it's something that produces pleasure, you want more of it. And if it produces pain, you want to avoid it or fight it, get rid of it. And so we find the laws of the flesh we all come with. That's what we have universally. That's what we all have in common. But the Word of God is contrast. It's above, below. Right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. And so lie not one to another, seeing you've put off the old man with his deeds. What do we not have in common with God? He doesn't lie, but we do. So there's two different praxis. There's the old man praxis, which is lying, and the new man praxis, which is not lying, proclaiming the truth. Now, as I ended up the last program, we're covering Carl Rogers, Rogerian psychology. He's one of the major men in counseling, and this is including in the church, all of education today. And I won't go through it. You can get the last programs. He writes, and this is out of his book on Becoming a Person. He writes, life at its best is a flowing, changing process in which nothing is fixed. Remember in the last program, Marx said, in the eyes of the dialectical philosophy, nothing is established for all times. Nothing is absolute or sacred. And so everything is in a change of flux. That's Hegelian dialectical process. All is in flux. That's change. Heard the word change recently? And so nothing is fixed. The good life, he says, is not any fixed state. The good life is a process. So, Antonio Gramsci, he's a Marxist in Italy. He wrote, you can get a hold of his books. His writings are quite popular today. He writes, the truth is a moment in correct praxis. In other words, there's a right procedure that brings truth forth. Truth is not found above man. Truth is found within man's experience of the moment. How you respond to the given situation is called situation ethics, values, clarification. Is the determinant of what was good, what is truth. Then Rogers writes, the direction which constitutes the good life is psychological freedom to move in any direction. The general qualities of this selected direction appears to have certain universality. In other words, if you haven't heard the prior program, I'm probably going to leave you in the dark here, but the effect in the environment upon us is that, again, if there are certain neurons that produce chemicals, neurotransmitters, one of them is dopamine, there's serotonin, GABA, and others that directly correlate with pleasure. Anything you take that triggers that dopamine, it's released in the brain, the dopamine, and you naturally then, your memory is heightened, awareness is heightened, muscles are activated in the direction of whatever in the environment created the dopamine, released the dopamine, triggered the dopamine, liberated, emancipated it. So you, and therefore you look into the environment to get more. So you're doing homework, and you know when you first doing homework, sometimes it's exciting. You're getting dopamine. It's something new. But when you repeat something over and over, dopamine isn't really being produced when you repeat. After a while, it just doesn't produce. You're reinforcing the neurons in the brain that originally information was new and dopamine was involved. But when you repeat it over and over to reinforce it, there's none of the dopamine released. And so that's boring. And so you notice that you start to look into the environment or daydream, remembering moments of the past or creating moments where you can get some dopamine. So the environment, whether it's in our brain that we artificially create, the imagination, or the environment outside of us, we look out there for something to trigger more dopamine, more pleasure. That's universal. That's true to every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth. And according to Rogers, then, psychological freedom is the freedom to pursue pleasure, to pursue happiness. Am I against the pursuit of happiness? No. But that's not your foundation of life. See? It's interesting. Hope. If you read Kant, Immanuel Kant, Critique of Pure Reason, and all these social scientists, they look at the struggle within man for harmony and peace and relationship and identity and all that, and removing alienation and reification, which are standards that interfere with changing society so you can keep up with the times and be a part of society, part of the group, going with the flow. Remember, life's a flux and change, and it's not in any fixed state. And so, and that then is exciting. There's dopamine in the change, in the state of change. In the process, therefore, is built on psychological freedom. So anything that comes in as a barrier to that freedom is not good. See, if it actually comes in and says no, when Jesus said man doesn't live by bread alone, you smell bread, dopamine. But what? Every word which proceeds from the mouth of God. What when God says go into the desert, you go, wait a minute, you know, maybe I'm excited at first because I've never seen a lizard before, like, you know, some of these out here. And, you know, it's sort of interesting things and you're discovering new things, but after a while it gets boring. You know, it doesn't take long to get bored in the desert. There's not a whole lot. It may be a little anxiety there, you know, noises at night, and short of water, whatever. But if there's any universality, it's not a universality to be approached, especially if it was going to cause death. And so Jesus in the temptations was simply saying, you know what? Even if I die, I'm doing what my Father tells me to do. That voice from above me is greater than any of the so-called psychological freedom that the world can offer. Because that's all Satan was offering. Jesus and the temptation showing him the kings of the world. These people are yours. You can get all kinds of praise from them. Just worship me. No, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou worship, which is spiritual. See, you worship the world, by the way, it's not spiritual. It's dopamine. It's for the approval of men, respect of men. Rogers then goes on, we know how to disintegrate a man's personality structure, dissolving his self-confidence, destroying the concept he has of himself, and making him dependent upon another. These guys are all about freedom. Now, why am I focusing on Rogers on these programs is because, again, he is a foundational thought of the dialectical process applied in counseling and education. The church growth, emergent church, is all built on this structure of thought. You can't go down to that mega church without this being the foundation. They wouldn't exist today without this foundation. He says, we can choose to use our growing knowledge to enslave people in ways never dreamed of before, depersonalizing them, controlling them by means so carefully selected that they will perhaps never be aware of their loss of personhood. Wow, isn't that nice? Well, it's interesting. If I get you in a pleasurable environment, and you can do like Eve, because that's this whole dialectical process is in Genesis 3, 1 through 6, can justify that the command of the parent is irrelevant in the situation, you'll never be aware of your loss of personhood, because your identity is really from God. He's the one who breathed the breath of life into your nostrils and made Adam a living soul, and we're all a byproduct of that. And when you reject God's commands for the moment, for the approval of men, then you have lost your personhood, your identity from God. Oh, by the way, you know, God's identity for you is that you're a sinner. And without Jesus, you have no identity for eternity, hell. You know, you might have personal identity. It's where you're going with that personal identity. Then he writes, how shall we use the power of this new science? It's not new. They're just boasting. What happens to the individual person in this brave new world? That's his quote. Who will hold the power to use this new knowledge? Toward what end or purpose or value will this new type of knowledge be used? Of course, he knows. And as I said, the whole emphasis is on delivering man from neurosis, from right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. He writes that the person lives openly and freely. And I'll get into this in a little bit. In fact, I think the first show I did on Rogerian psychology, I covered this aspect about how the person, once they've been through the counseling, once they're not concerned about what parents or what God says, but they're concerned about how they feel or what they can get, because all of man's love is, what can I get out of this relationship for me? See, that's not God's love. If the Father sent the Son, what's the Father going to get out of his love for you and for me? A dead son. Yeah. A son who is chastened to death, who dies, goes through complete rejection of the Father. The Father raises him from the grave, and then he sends his Holy Spirit. You know, that's all coming from God. He's not getting anything out of it except faithfulness to his word. Let us make man in our own image. And by the way, that image is an image of obedience to promises and commands. That's God's image. But see, when Eve was seduced, deceived, and then she said, you'll become like God is not being God. Because the whole concept is evaluation, but all we can do is evaluate from the environment that stimulates pleasure, look into the environment. Is it an environment that produces pleasure? If it produces pain, maybe we better avoid it. If it produces pleasure, then we better get more of it. That's our evaluation. That's the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life, which is universal, which every soul on the face of the earth practices today. And if you want world peace and social harmony and globalism, that's your only platform. You have no other platform. And so when Rogers is saying it's changing this, we live openly and freely in relation to others, you've got to be tolerant. Tolerance, by the way, or let's use the word ambiguity. The word, let me back up, tolerance is not shown up on the day of judgment. God's not tolerant. There is no law of nature that's tolerant. And ambiguity, that's another one. See, you've got to be tolerant of ambiguity. The homosexual crowd group in France used the word ambiguity for homosexuality. And if you study Sigmund Freud, which Rogers and Maslow and all these guys built from, he said that, you know, all children are sexually active. This is your counseling. You know, you meet anybody who calls themselves a Christian psychologist. They are built on the foundation that says all children are sexually active. And they can say, well, I don't believe that. They can say whatever they want. They're built on the system. You can stand on the Titanic and say, well, no, I don't believe this is a safe ship. But you're on it. You're built on it. And so what he meant was, every child has touch, taste, sight, smell, sound. The sensuousness that's correlated with sex. Now, they can't procreate, but they can have all the sensuousness that comes from a husband and wife in the relationship. That the husband and wife can procreate because they're of age, but the child cannot procreate because they don't have that ability, but they do have this, all the sensuousness of touch, taste, sight, smell, sound that are involved in sexual actions, so that Freud is saying all children are sexually active. Now, if that is the outcome, if pursuit of pleasure, those senses, not procreation. We can get rid of it. The whole agenda of the dialectical process is not procreation, because that brings laws and responsibility, getting up at late at night and stepping on squeaky, you know, toys in the middle of the night and having heart attacks, and changing diapers, which is not a dopamine moment. No, the whole agenda of the way the man is created and the woman is created is for pleasure in counseling. That's all of psychology. It's the eros of man. And you can throw agape in there all you want. They've simply clothed up eros and called it agape. Junk food. Christianity. It's not Christianity. It's apostasy. And so if all children are sexually active, but they cannot procreate, and that is good, and they'll say, oh no, we're against pedophilia. Baloney. They're built on a structure of homosexuality, pedophilia, bestiality. Study Sigmund Freud. That's the only foundation. And so what happens then is if the children cannot procreate because they have all this sensuousness that's involved, that is the very structure. You have to think this through. But that's a structure of homosexuality, because homosexuality is you have all the touch, taste, sight, smell, sound that a child would have without procreation. Same with pedophilia, same with bestiality. You can bond with anything in the creation and get those senses. See, and that is called incest. And so Irvin Yalom said, and he's a liberal, wrote a book, Theory and Practice in Group Psychotherapy. He says, you sum up Sigmund Freud with these two words, patricide. In other words, you got to get rid of that negative voice. What would Dad say? What would God say? And incest. What does it mean to me? What can I get out of this relationship for me? That's man's love. You hang around with people that you like. Why? Because you're getting some dopamine from the relationship. That's why you're hanging around with them. God loved you while you were in sin. See, that's God's love. You cannot love like that. It's impossible, because your love is always from the flesh. It's not spiritual. You can shake your head and, no, I don't agree with that. And you're deceived, because it's impossible for you and me to love, truly love, apart from the work of God in our life. Totally different love. World cannot comprehend that. So you can't even have joy, joy unspeakable. You can't even explain it to the world. The world cannot, because it's from God. It's not of the world. Peace that transcends understanding. These are all byproducts. No, the world is pursuing them. They'll never get there because they're not broken and humble before God. Denying themselves, humbling themselves. You know, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow in Jesus. But Rogers again, I get off. The person lives openly and freely in relation to others. Now, we're talking about homosexuality here, folks. You can use this in a kindergarten class, but it is a structure for homosexuality. Guiding his behavior on the basis of his immediate experiencing. And we've covered this experiencing. Rogers, again, last week, experiences for me the foundation of life. What Eve did in the garden was experiencing. And then he says, he, man, has become an integrated process of changingness. Another word, change. The innermost core of man's nature, the base of his animal nature, is positive in nature. Notice everything about being positive. You see, if people say to you, can't you be positive? They're asking you to be like an animal. Don't be negative. That's like God. Don't be like God. This is in a church today. Don't come in here and be negative. Don't be like God. Be positive. Be like animals. Because they approach pleasure and avoid pain. You know, what does the Bible say? Deny yourself, pick up your cross. Pain, pain. Pain, pain. Chastening, pain. And so you put on the whole armor of God, and it doesn't matter what happens to me. See, it's what God tells me to do, to daily. It's not an issue of, Lord, how do you get me out of this pain? It's, Lord, what do you want me to do here today? And then Rogers, in the regards to the dialectical process, he says, individuals move not from a fixity through change to a new fixity, though such a process is indeed possible, but through a continuum from fixity to changingness, from rigid structure to flow, from status to process. Now here's the trickery, because this is all trickery. This is all deception. What Satan did with Eve in the garden was trickery, was deception. Because once the counselor gets your feelings on board, you were born with those feelings. Your feeling as a child was to approach pleasure and avoid pain. That's your feelings you will carry throughout your whole life till the day you die. And so that is always a process of changingness. And it's on one road. It's an experiential road. You can identify whether it's a child or a 40-year-old or an 80-year-old. Those senses of feelings are universal. That when God formed man from the dust of the ground, we're all the byproduct of that. And that's what we carry. That's universality. And so he's saying, okay, now we have a spectrum between not a fixity, not above below, because that's fixity. Fixity is spirit, flesh. You're either one or the other, and there's no in between. And that's biblical. See, he's rejecting that. He's saying, oh, it might exist. But listen to the language. Individuals move not from a fixity through change to a new fixity, though such a process is indeed possible. It might exist. God's structure in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation is on fixity. You're in heaven or hell for eternity. That's fixity. There's a chasm in between. Nobody can cross. That's fixity. I'm above. You're below. My ways are not your ways. Neither your thoughts, my thoughts. That's a fixity. He says, well, it might be possible. But they've rejected it. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Now, why am I upset? Because you go down to your local Christian school. Every certified Christian teacher studied in college how to apply this mentality. Somebody come, if you have a family, large family, particularly, and people come to you and say, what about your children's social life? That's communism. That's dialectic. That's anti-biblical. God never, ever will ask you as a parent, what about your children's social life? Never. It will not come from the Word of God because it's contrast, it's fixity, above, below, light, dark, sheep, goats, heaven, hell. It's always contrast. Wow. You talk about deception. There are two roads, two paths, straight and narrow. How straight and how narrow? You'll die to take that path. You'll die to yourself daily to take that path because you're walking on a fixity. God is unchanging. This whole dialectic rejects that. That's irrelevancy. It's treated with contempt. But he says, now, life, people move from in a continuity from fixity to changingness. In other words, you start with this right, wrong way of thinking. Here, we'll take it to the scriptures. We all come into this life with a measure of faith. All children have this faith. You can tell them something, they'll believe you. So you start with a fixity. But what happens when Jesus said, when he returns, there will not be faith? Will there be faith? It's an implied understanding. Yes, there will not be faith. What happened? Because everybody went to changingness. And so the whole dialectical process is a taxonomy. Whose thesis over here? Whose antithesis? Who's opposing? The thesis is position, antithesis is feelings. Feelings are involved with antithesis, because if we both have something in common, which is the environment triggers the desire for pleasure, and we look at the environment for pleasure, and therein that we have conflicts that prevent us from agreeing on this pleasure, then we've got to get rid of the negative and focus on the positive. And so I have to find out where you are along this spectrum, which on the one road. See, it's not two roads. We're all on one road. You just have relics of the past. You just have standards of the past that prevent you from changing us in the present. And so he's categorizing this taxonomy. This is Bloom's taxonomy. Every teacher trained to apply this system in the classroom, in the textbooks. You get the textbooks on any facts, and they'll say, well, how would you feel or what would you think? All of a sudden, you're on one road. You're on the road of the flesh. You're not dealing with facts. Fixity, 2 plus 2 is 4, and cannot be any other number. That's fixity. The classes out there, if your teacher's certified and trained in Bloom and using this process, they might have 2 plus 2 equals 4 and cannot be any other number, might be in there, but then they're going to ask the kids, how do you feel and what do you think? And all of a sudden you went to one road. It's feelings, universality, globalism, communism, socialism, UN, Council of Foreign Relations, cabinet of the White House. All the departments, do you realize all the departments, the social services, are built on this process, not on fixity? And they say, well, you can keep your religion over there. What's a religion, folks? This is a humanist religion of one road. You better be on the one road or you're neurotic, and you're going to be treated with contempt. We'll come and take your children away. It's happening. We'll take your property away. Because you're just too extreme. You know, you're a fundamentalist. Fundamentalist is there's fixity. The courts hold this. You know, there might be a few judges left out there, but they're going out. The young kids coming in, they know nothing but this one road mentality. The broad path. Heading to hell, but they're having a good time. Because there is no hell. There is no heaven. We're going to make heaven here on earth. We can do it. Just join us. And then, oh, by the way, if you're not joining us, then you're in the past. You're a relic of the past. And maybe you're relevant. And maybe we shouldn't allow you to have children. Maybe we shouldn't allow you to have a business. So he says, from rigid structure to flow. See, this is the dialectic. From status to process. The qualities of the client's expression at any point, any one point, might indicate his position on this continuum, might indicate where he stood in the process of change. So once I put you in this process, that's a facilitated meeting, they're mapping everybody in the room. The words you, the language you use actually comes from the paradigm. If you're an black and white kind of person, if your language is this is right and that is not, you're instantly identified as patriarch. And if you refuse to move from your position, you're an extremist. You're a fundamentalist. You're a lower order thinker. You're unadaptable to change. You're hurting everybody's feelings in the room. Don't be so negative and divisive and hateful, intolerant, and prejudiced, and maladjusted. A lower order thinker, unadaptable to change. All kinds of terms come after you to get you to get on this broad path to be a part of the world system in the name of Jesus, by the way. That's the mega church, church growth. So the qualities of feeling, a ness, happiness, faithfulness. What Hegel said, we have to have faithfulness without faith and lawfulness without law. What does that mean? Well, we have a feeling of law, but we have no law. Laws have to be relative. They're just feeling of restraint for the moment, not set in granite. Well, he says the qualities of the client's expression at any point might indicate his position. So if I create an ambiguous environment and you come in and say is or not, then you instantly are put on a spectrum or along this process, because you also have the laws of the flesh, which the facilitator wants to draw it out, draw your oddities out, your dissatisfaction to anything in the past that prevented you from bonding with whatever is in the environment today. And if I can get you to share your oughtiness, create an environment of oddiness, then I can deliver you from rigidity. That's all Satan did with Eve. I ought to be able to touch a tree. Gets that out, looks at the tree. There's nothing wrong with the tree. There's your evaluation. Everybody goes through it in the meetings, and then we end up with a group hug. We have a sensuous experience, an orgiastic Dionysian moment called consensus. It's a universal program going on today. Everywhere around, it is the foundation of the Antichrist, and it is the foundation of church growth, emerging church. Antichrist, by the way, cannot function without a dialectical church, because that will always be used to persecute the true believers. A fixity, right, wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, hell. I'm above, you're from below, which will never change. We're not in partnership with God. I'm a joint heir. See, I'm joined in, grafted in by his work and his work alone. Just trust in him. Lean not to your own understanding. Well, we'll continue on the other side of these messages.